Let's skip to chapter Tezayin, Posuk Kof Gimel. Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, Daber el ho'edo lemor, Hei olu misoviv lemishkan koirach doson va'aviro. Hei olu literally means go up. Go up, it means in a spiritual sense, separate yourself physically from them. Don't think that the fact that your intentions are to separate yourself is sufficient. You have to, with a physical act, show that separation between you and Koirach Doson Vaviro. Posuk Chofei. Vayokom Moshe, vayelech el Doson Vaviro, vayelchu acharov zikne Israel. So by now, Zikne Israel, the leaders of the Jewish people, besides the 250, are all on his side, on Moshe Rabbeinu's side. Posuk Chovov, vaydaber el ho'edo lemor. Suruno me'al oholeho anoshim or shoim o'eile. Keep away from them. Ve'al tiku'u b'chol asher lohem. Don't touch anything that belongs to them. Pentisofu b'chol chatoisom. Because it's possible for you to die, to suffer because of their sins. If you don't want to suffer from their sins, so you must physically separate from them. Because physical proximity causes you to be punished together with them, even though you may not deserve it. And in Posuk Chof Zayin, Vayeolu me'al mishkan Koirach doson va'aviro misoviv. And the Jews left Koirach, v'doson va'aviro yotzu nitzovim pesach oleihem u'nesheihem u'bneihem v'tapom. Unfortunately, the descendants of Doson Vavirom joined Doson Vavirom in the rebellion. They didn't separate themselves. And in Posuk Chof Ches, Vayom Rav Moshe, Bezois tei de'un ki Hashem shlochani la'asois es kol ha'masim o'ele. I'm going to make a sign now that will prove that it was Hashem who sent me in everything which I did. Ki loy mi libi. It wasn't my interpretation, because what's Korach's point of view? That whatever Moshe Rabbeinu says is min hashamayim. We explain that Korach doesn't deny that Moshe Rabbeinu's messages come from Hashem. What he decides is that Moshe Rabbeinu interprets those statements of Hashem in order to benefit him. So he says, this will prove ki loy mi libi. What will be the sign? Posuk Chof Tes. Im kemoish kol ho'odom yemusun eile. If the death of all these people involved in the rebellion will be equal to the death of people normally, moish kol ho'odom. Ufkudas kol ho'odom yipokeid aleihem. That has a very difficult translation. Ufkudas. What does it mean, ufkudas kol ho'odom? Kudas either means the remembrance, pekedo, the remembrance. In the English, it's translated as the visitation of all men will visit upon them. What does it mean? Seems on the surface it's just a repetition of the idea of death. Death is a visitation, right? So if this is so, it's redundant. So who needs it? Who needs the statement of Kudash Kol Odom Yipoked? It says already. If you people, if these people, the people who are involved in the rebellion, die a natural death, and the normal visitation of men comes upon them, who needs that statement? Does it clarify anything? In the Torah won't repeat a statement unless the statement adds to our understanding of it. What is the additional understanding of the statement if it says Ufkudas kol ha'odom yipoked aleihem? Okay, so yeah.
Just the numbering 20 to 60 that they were going to die in the desert, aside from a natural death, which is the first phrase.
Okay, so you say, well, it has to do Ufkudas kol ha'odom, that they won't die the normal death of the people between 20 and 60, which was already decreed before. Well, obviously, isn't that included already in the statement before? They will not have a natural death. It will be a special death. You already said it. That's not being clarified by the statement, Ufkudas kol ha'odom yipoked. Okay, so let's put it, this statement, that later on will become the key to the understanding of the whole event, let's put it aside in our memory. What does the statement mean? Ufkudas kol ha'odom yipoked. I'm telling you, that it won't be Hudas Kol Odomi Pokei, said Moshe Rabbeinu. And if yes, and if the people of the rebellion will die a natural death, and the normal visitation, whatever that means, the normal pekido, let's call it, will come upon them, Loi Hashem Shlochoni. That is a sign that Hashem didn't send me. Dear, if all the people involved in the rebellion, all of a sudden, in one split second, all of them get a heart attack and they all die, it's a very unusual event. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't prove anything. Why not? Why not? Do you hear the problem here? What is, wouldn't that be a miracle that would impress people? Why does it have to be a supernatural death in order to impress them? Natural events that are so incredibly coincidental, isn't that considered an S? That's also considered an S. Why do you need a supernatural event? This is another problem that we have. And in Posuk Lamed, Ve'im Berio Yivro Hashem. But if what you people are going to see is a new Berio, something which is a complete new creation, nothing which exists in nature, Ufotzeso Hoadomo Espio, and the earth opens its mouth, Uvolo Isom, and the earth swallows them, Veskola Shelohem, Viordu Chaim Sheoilo, and they go to the depth while they are alive, Vidatem Kiniatsu Anoshim Oeles Hashem. Then it will be a sign that I am right and they are wrong. Again, this creates problems. I'll read to you the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, Yivro Hashem. Says the Ibn Ezra, obviously he says, it can be literally a creation, he says. Why? Because we have seen earthquakes. We have seen earthquakes in which the earth actually opens up and whole buildings just collapse and fall into the earth. This is not something so unusual. You don't need a new Berio for that, says the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, Ukvar nifku medinois rabois. I know that there were many whole cities that were swallowed by earthquakes. Ve'oyordu hadorim bohem she'oilo. So therefore, says the Ibn Ezra, you can't take literally the word Berio. It means like a gzera, a new decree of God. It doesn't mean Berio. But the question still remains. Why is this considered? Why is an earthquake more of a supernatural event than a sudden heart attack that affects all the people involved in the rebellion, or let's say a lightning comes down from heaven, burns everybody down? That's not good enough. That's too natural. Why? Why do you need something supernatural? Okay, so we have a double problem. First of all, who needs something supernatural? Second of all, we have the problem of Ibn Ezra. Is it so supernatural that the earth splits and the people fall into it? I don't see it as something more supernatural. That it's very, that the coincidence is incredible, that the earth only opened up around Korach and his people, and nobody else was affected. Sure, that's a miracle, but you can't call it supernatural. Right? It's a coincidence. So good, so that's a nes.
But he calls it Bria.
But that's the problem. You wouldn't call it a Bria. Okay, so we have a double problem. Who needs the supernatural? Second of all, is it supernatural? Let's go on. Posuk Lamedalef. Vayehi kechaloisoi ledaber es kol advorim o'eile, vatiboka ho adomo asher tachteyim. The earth only under them splits. Posuk Lamed Beit. Vatiftach ho'oretz espio, vativla oisom ves boteyim. What? Exactly as it was supposed to happen. Earth opens up, everybody swallowed, ves kol odom asher lekoyrach, ves kol arachush. Posuk Lamed Gimel. Vayerdu heim, vechol asher lohem, Chaim She'oilo. Again, a stress. They are still alive and they are swallowed. Why is the fact that they are still alive? Maybe they all died when they came down? No! They are alive when they come down. Why is this a relevant fact? Who cares? As far as the miracle is concerned, it's irrelevant. If when they are swallowed, are they alive or they are already dead? Who cares as far as the miracle is concerned? No! It makes a difference. Why does it make a difference? What?
It's unnatural.
Because it's more unnatural, you say. Okay. According to most opinions, Korach was from Min Hanivloi. He was swallowed. But listen to this description of the post-miracle situation. The miracle was definitely the swallowing. No. Vatechas aleihem ho'oretz. What does it mean, vatechas aleihem ho'oretz? Right after the earth swallowed them, the earth closed on top of them. Why is this necessary? Is this part of the miracle? And listen to the last statement. Vayoivdu mitoich hakohol. And the Adas Koirach become lost from the community. I mean, they died. I mean, what do you mean they become lost? What does it mean? It's swallowed up. What do you mean they become? Now they are lost. They were covered up and now they are lost. What's the idea? The miracle is the fact that they are swallowed. What happens after the swallowing is irrelevant. No, somehow the post-miracle events are crucial. Why? Again, another problem that we have. And then we have a general problem, which the Mefarshim talk about. Every single miracle which is described in the Torah has a direct purpose. Hashem doesn't make miracles just to show that he's strong. Hashem makes miracles for a purpose. As a side advantage, we also know that he's capable of making the miracles. But the miracle always has a direct result, a direct benefit. Like, for instance, Kriyat Yamsuf. Kriyat Yamsuf wasn't just to show God says, I can do it. There was a direct purpose. The Jews should cross the sea. Okay? The man was a supernatural miracle. But there was a direct purpose. So the Jews should have food. The water was a miracle. There was a direct purpose. Jews should benefit from it. Where do we ever find a miracle which has no purpose whatsoever except to show you that I can do it? That's all, to show you that I'm right and you are wrong. Where do you find such a thing? A miracle has a purpose when Hashem makes a miracle. But the Makos did something, which means there is something that it did. It directly did something. Here, what is the purpose of the miracle? To show that Moshe is right, so anything would be enough. Yeah. Why this particular one? Anything would be enough. Like I told you before, everybody getting all of a sudden a lightning will come and strike everybody together. That also proves the point. Yeah. There is no new point, which is proven by the fact that the earth swallows them. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Isn't the purpose to kill them?
So good, so kill them. There is many ways that you can kill them. Why? The method of killing makes a difference here. What is the lesson? What is the meaning? What is the message in this particular method of killing? And you can't say, no, it's just a method, that's all. There must be a direct connection between the sin, the situation, and how they die. Why is the swallowing related to the sin of Korach, to something? Why did it have to happen, so to speak? Yeah.
Ian is right though, but the Makos, we didn't need all 10 Makos. Hashem hardened his heart in order that he should know that Hashem is strong. You would have let us down, Carlos would have sent us down before that, but Hashem hardened his heart and made him say, no, you can't leave.
Right, but the idea of the Makos is to convince Paro to let us out. We know we have information that Paro doesn't have, that it won't help him. But on the surface, the purpose of the Makos is to pressure Paro into letting us out. There is a purpose in the miracle. Every miracle has a purpose. It's not a miracle for the sake of a miracle. It's a miracle for a result. What is the result of this? Do you hear what the question is here? So just to clarify again, how many problems we have in the whole parsha? We have number one. Let's recall all the problems that we have. Number one, we have the original, the first problem in Posuk Chofres, that he says, if they die naturally, all of them get a heart attack at the same time, then I'm wrong. I mean, such an impressive thing. Why should it be that that is not enough of a sign? That's the first problem we have. The second problem is the textual problem. What does it mean? Ufkudas kol ha'odom yipokei. Remember, this is going to be the key to the answer. Ufkudas kol ha'odom yipokei. Moshe Rabbeinu says, if ufkudas kol ha'odom yipokei, then I'm wrong. There is some importance to the statement of Kudas Kol Adom Ipoked, which on the surface is just a repetition that if you die like everybody else. The other problem we have is the Ibn Ezra's problem. Is there a brio here? Why is an earthquake considered a brio? An earthquake is as natural as everything else that might have happened to Korach than a heart attack. The other problem that we have is the stress on the chaim, that they are swallowed alive. They don't die. They are swallowed. What is the idea behind being swallowed? And the final problem is, why does it say at the end, in Posuk Lamed Gimel, Vatchas aleihem ha'oretz, that the earth covered them up, Vayoevdu mitoy hakol, and they get lost? What is the importance of this event in the whole nest? It has no meaning that the earth covered them up. It would be much more reasonable that the earth should remain split open as a sign for the future. Remember, when you see this split, this is where Korach was swallowed. What's the idea of the earth covering itself up? And what is the expression, and they got lost from among the people? They died. What do you mean got lost? What is the idea behind it? Says the Sfas Emes. Two pieces of information we have to have. Two pieces of the puzzle, and then we'll put it all together, and then you'll understand, says the Sfas Emes, how everything fits in. First of all, the word lifkoit, ufkudas kol odom, what does it mean, ufkudas kol odom? If you take a look in Shmois chapter 20, Posuk 5, Shmois 20, Posuk 5. Aseret HaDibros. You're not allowed to bow down, you're not allowed to worship idols. Because if somebody worships idols, How will I react? Not only to the person who worships the idols. Because what about if a person worships the idols and he dies? Even so, I will react. Because poiked avoino voice al bonim. Do you hear the word poiked? Okay, kidas kododom. I will remember, so to speak. I will transfer the sin of the parents to the children, to the grandchildren, to the great grandchildren. Let's so know you. It will go on to future generations. Say the Meforshim here, the Gemara asks, what do you mean? People will suffer for the sins of their parents? We know that people don't die for the sins of their parents. So how can it be that till they will die for the sins of the parents? They will be punished for the sin of the parents? Answers the Gemara. That poikei davoino voice means bemachzikim maisei avoisom biyodom. Only if they continue doing what the parents did. That's how the Gemara says it. Right? So, what does it mean? Does it mean that if the father is a thief and the child is a thief, then the child will suffer for the father's sin? Well, he doesn't have to suffer for the father's sin. Sure. Because if he's a thief himself, then he's suffering for his own sin. So what does it mean that he will suffer for his father's sin? So we have here two approaches. Again, we have the Ibn Ezra's approach and the Ramban's approach. The Ibn Ezra is a very, very interesting approach here in Poikei Davoino Voisalponim. According to Ibn Ezra, let me read to you certain parts, which is very tremendous chidush. He says like this, a person will have children, he says, She'ashem yase toiv libneyem. Adin case, let's say a person does something good, right? So whatever merit the father gathered, it will be visited upon the children. In a lesser way, evil deeds will also be visited upon the children. How, he says? Because what it means is that it will affect the children, and also that the children can affect retroactively the parents. This is the chidush of the Ibn Ezra. a person, let's say, died as an Oved Avodah Zarah, Hashem says, Poiked Avoy no voice, I will visit your sin to your child. Perhaps your child will be such a tzaddik that he can rectify your sin. Here, incredible thing. Which means that the zechuyos of the children can affect past generations. Okay? Now, second approach. That is the novel approach.
Where does he get that from? How does he get that?
Because he learns. Poiked Avoy no voice means he remembers. He remembers means he keeps in mind. When Hashem focuses on the second generation, he says, I remember what your father did. What, in what way does it make a difference that Hashem remembers what his father did? That if the child will do something great, it can rectify the sin of the father. This is what it means, remember. It means he won't close the book on his father until after a certain amount of generations.
Can you make it worse for the father?
What?
Can you make it worse for the father?
Well, I guess so. Can you make it worse too? But you can make it better too. Now,
does that he know that a neshama in olam haba benefits from the deeds of his children?
But it's a chidush. You're right. The principle is not a chidush. But as a pshat in the posuk is a big chidush. Nobody else says it. Even Ezra says it. Nobody else says it. That poiked avoy no voice means that he doesn't close the book on you until your great grandchildren. That's a tremendous chidush. Okay. So that is one approach. The Ramban takes the other approach. That it means simply the following. That a person's actions affect their children. Which means the following. I'm going to explain what the Ramban says. Let's say a certain person is a gangster, the worst. Right? So spiritually he's in this low level. Okay? Now, he is a child. Is the fact that he spiritually, the father, is in a very low level, does that affect the potential of the child? Yes, says the Torah, it does affect the potential of the child. Except that the child can overcome the limitations. He has Bechiret, he can overcome the limitations. But if a terrible gangster will have a child, right, the chances are that his limits, even with his potential, will be less than the limits of someone who is a descendant of a great tzaddik. Dear. Everything else being equal, if you put in the same amount of energy and effort to become a tzaddik, if you are a child of a tzaddik, you will have a better chance to reach higher than if you're a child of a gangster. It will affect your descendants. There is such a thing, we'll call it the spiritual genetic code. You affect future generations, whether they know it or they don't know it. A descendant of a thief can become very honest, but he will have to struggle against the desire to hold up a bank, for instance. It could be that a tzaddik isoy doilom, a great tzaddik son, he'll also have to struggle to remain honest. But probably his level is, you know, should I take the piece of paper on the table or not? But somebody else, he will struggle for honesty will be, will I hold up a bank or not? It means everybody struggles with honesty, but each one struggles in a different level. If you are a child of a thief, the chances are that your struggle will be in a much lower level. Yes?
Yeah, we see the preparation of that that is those restrictions.
Right? You can overcome it. First of all, the person himself is easier. I mean, with tshuva, the person himself has the advantage of tshuva. A child can't make tshuva for his father. The person himself has a power to do tshuva. The child can do tshuva of his father. The damage is done, and it's done forever. You have to struggle against it, and you can overcome it. But you are limited by it. You are limited by it. Which means that, if you take the biggest gangster, and you say, can his child become the tzaddik isoy doilom? If we would know the genetic code, if we would understand it, we probably would say, no, that much he can perhaps reach. If his father is this low, he can go this high. But he can't get this high. There are limits to how high you go because there are spiritual genetic limitations. This is the meaning of the statement. Poiked avoy no voice al bonim. The sin of the parents will have consequences, not punishments. Consequences in future generations. You will have to struggle with the spiritual limitations created by your parents. This is the Ramban's approach. It goes from backwards to forwards, from the back to the front. Not like the Ibn Ezra says that it goes backwards. Poiket avoino vois means that the children will affect the parents. Right? That the parents will affect the children, it means. Is this clear, these two approaches? Yeah.
Isn't this a book shot that if you commit a sin and you're guilty, then you're punished as well for your parents that you committed that sin? That is, whatever your parents did, you're punished for that as well.
But again, that doesn't make any sense because you are being punished for somebody else's sin. So how does that...
We are not.
We suffer the consequences. Yeah, that's the point. We are never punished for somebody else's sin. Because punishment is something that you can only give to the person who is guilty. If you are not guilty, you can't be punished. But you can suffer the consequences. That is what the Ramban is saying. Poike da boino voice. Those consequences are that you are limited by the sins of your parents. Okay?
What do you say? The punishment is designed to correct the person, but the consequences, just a limitation on them?
It's a limitation on them.
Without correcting them, as the punishment is designed to do.
Well, by overcoming it, he may correct it. By overcoming it, the child may correct it. But he has to live with the limitations.
He didn't do the sin.
If this is the chapter over here, that you set a genetic trend and it affects all generations in the future, why does this stop at the fourth generation? It should be done forever.
Okay, so on this, we'll have to clarify according to this passage. This what it says, that if you do something bad, it only goes up to the fourth generation. It means that the direct results are clear up to four generations. Well, according to the Ibn Ezra also, you'll see right away. However, after the fourth generation, it becomes more and more and more diluted. It doesn't all of a sudden become cut off. The Torah is only describing to you the direct impact. There is a direct impact up to the fourth generation. From the fourth generation onwards, much, much less. It's diluted. But there is still room. It will still affect you. Which means that there are limitations that go on forever. But it's so minute that it's almost limitless where you can reach.
What about the imos? Just the avos?
No, either way. That works in both directions. Obviously, imos makes no difference. Yeah.
Sorry, what about the concept of the three generations?
Right, that exactly, meaning it does have an effect after the fourth generation, but the impact is up to the fourth generation, but it has an effect forever, right? Yeah.
That's what I found on that fresh Lucky's thing. That's not quite sure, because we don't know that his father was born as deep or anything. In fact, when he started off...
Exactly. First, he was a great tzaddik. Then he abandoned everything. Then he came back again. Right. So, yes, right. Okay, now. So, once we have this insight into the meaning of the word pokeid, okay, now we have the key to the word pokeid. Okay, now. Let's say we are not specialists in this genetic code, in the spiritual genetic code, but let's assume we would be. Would we be able to predict, let's say we see a Rosh Gomor, and he brings a little child, and he says, this is my great-grandchild. If we would be specialists, wouldn't we be able to say, hey, wait a second, this child has special characteristics, it's impossible he is your great-grandchild, impossible. Would you say that someone who has an insight into how this genetic code works, would we be able to make such statements? Makes sense? Just that we are not specialists, we can't tell. But someone who is a specialist would be able to tell. True. If the code exists, that means that if you have an insight into its pattern, into how it works, then you can actually say, what are the limits of your great-great-grandchildren? How far can they reach? They can only reach up to here. They'll never reach up to there. Guaranteed. True? Okay, that's one piece of information. Second piece of information. The Gemara says like this. Koyrach shepikeach koyor. Koyrach was such a smart man, such an intelligent man, that his greatness in Torah is compared to the greatness of Aaron. That's what a great man he was. He was undoubtedly one of the greatest men in his generation of giants. How did he make such a terrible mistake? And didn't he realize, such an intelligent man, no answer will satisfy us. How could he have made such a terrible mistake? Answers the Gemara that you know how he made such a mistake? Because, like many people in that generation, they had prophetic insights, prophetic intuition. According to this genetic code, it's impossible that if I am wrong, then I'm terribly wrong. Listen, if I am wrong, then I'm a Rosh Marusha, I'm the worst.
Right?
So if I am that low, how high can my great-great-grandchild be? He can reach this potential, but he can't be Shmuel Hanavi, impossible. So if I'm not completely wrong, then what's the choice? Then I'm completely right. So if I'm completely right, I'll fight for it. Here. So Korach was smart enough to know that there is a big doubt whether he's right or wrong. But what convinced him is the fact that Shmuel Hanavi exists in the future.
After so many generations, even if he was a Rosh, he said that he's
Tzadikim. But remember, in every generation, as it becomes more and more diluted, the limits are higher. I mean, you can become a greater tzaddik, a greater tzaddik. But there are limits. Shmuel Hanavi, I mean, he's up there. It's not impossible that after four generations he should come out of court. Impossible.
As four generations?
Whatever it is, I don't know. But I'm just telling you what went through in the mind of Korach.
So high, so high.
That high is impossible.
In his generation, he was the equal of Moshe and Aaron.
Who? Shmuel? And Korach also, right. Shmuel was. So, now, the question is turned around. Then, what went wrong with Moshe Rabbeinu's conclusion? What was wrong with Korach's conclusion? If he was so knowledgeable, so where did he go wrong? He did have a great-great-great-grandchild, Shmuel Hanavi. And he was wrong. So what went wrong? The system went wrong. Something happened here. Do you understand the question now? We are assuming that Korach knows the system. And based on that knowledge, he made the decision. I am sure that if my descendant is Shmuel Hanavi, I can't be wrong. True?
Even Hesse's system, if Shmuel was a
tzaddik,
retroactively he affects Korach.
Then Korach can't be such a
Roshan. Why can't he be a Roshan but benefiting Olam HaBa from Shmuel?
But still, you see, if Korach is like completely like his punishment is, remember, according to the Ibn Ezra, there is some backward causation, like you indirectly, if you are such a tzaddik, you must, of course, only in Hashem's world that this is possible. It must limit the potential rishus of the father. It's as if like the father's actions can be rectified. Can Korach's actions become rectified? How can it be? It's so bad, there is no room for rectification. How can a great-great-grandchild rectify something which is so bad? There has to be room for rectification. Do you understand what I'm saying?
How could he get so high to rectify it?
It's impossible. It's impossible. He can't reach that high.
Maybe he can't.
What?
Maybe he can't be rectified.
But he sees that he does. Because Shmuel Hanavi himself is the result of that. You see, then it was the other way around. And if he didn't rectify it, then Shmuel Hanavi can't exist. However you turn it, the gap between Korach and Shmuel Hanavi is too wide to bridge. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Why can't Korach be a Russia? Shmuel be a great tzaddik, but nonetheless, that's because be insufficient to correct Korach's defects.
Insufficient to rectify.
To rectify Korach's defects. Why can't that be the case?
Fine. So therefore, the gap is already that wide, right? Because you're saying such a wide gap between one generation and the next goes against the rules of the genetic transference, and Korach knows it. You see, you have to have a system which convinces Korach that if there is a Shmuel Hanavi, he can be all bad. Do you understand what I'm saying? Obviously, Korach's conclusion was, I can't be that bad if Shmuel Hanavi comes out of me.
That must mean, even according to Ibn Ezra, Ibn Ezra was also hold of the Ramban Shita.
Of course, it works both ways, of course, and no question about it. It's not, the Ibn Ezra just adds this second insight. Uh-huh. Of course, hold of the Ramban Shita. Ramban Shita is the simple Shita. Yeah.
There are many answers. There's one possibility is, Korach ends up not being that bad. You told us last day that there are valuable sins, and maybe this produces some good effects. Another possibility is he should have figured out that.
So,
no way
you see, whatever you are going to answer will create a problem on Korach's decision. Because whatever answer you are going to have, Korach thought of that answer, And still it convinced them that he must be completely right and he should fight for it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Whatever answer, you see that...
The prophecy is not binding. I mean, you wouldn't have free choice.
No. You have to understand. Any answer we are going to give, right, he would have thought of, and it would destroy his argument, and it would destroy the argument why he rebelled against Moshe. So, you see, it's counterproductive to give an answer to the question, because whatever answer will make Korah's decision more difficult. So we are better off saying that it's a question without an answer at this point. True? At this point, Korach is 100% right. If he can have a descendant of like Shmuel HaNovi, Korach can be Ben. So therefore he must be right. Except for one thing, and here we are coming to the crux of the matter, the important part of the situation. There is one thing that Hashem can do, right, that the system of genetic transference, the spiritual genetic system, should all of a sudden cease working as far as Korach's actions are concerned. Hashem has the koyach to go back in time and erase from the chain of events in history Korach's actions, to the point that Korach's actions leave the normal pattern of events, that it should not affect the future. That Hashem could do. But in order to do that, that definitely is not a natural cycle of events. That's not part of the rule. But what can Hashem do? A brio? A new creation? Something which is not part of the pattern of nature? Yes, he can. Now, what would be a physical sign of such an event, that Hashem is actually going back into history, erasing Korach's actions, in order that Korach's actions should not affect the future? It should mean not swallowing is part of it, but you need something else. After the swallowing,
separating him from people, closing
it, and it was exactly as it was before it opened up. What is the lesson of it? It's as if you never existed. Now, let's go through the parsha and look through how it fits in now, according to the Tzfas Emes, with this information that we have. Let's go back again to Parshas Korach again. Let's take a look again. Posuk Choftes. Im kemois kol odom imusun eile, if these people will die normal and natural death, and we ask, and that wouldn't be a miracle. No, Moshe is not worried about the miracle, of course. All people getting a heart attack at the same time is, of course, a miracle. But if they would die a natural death, what problem do we have? Pokeda voino voice, the existence of Shmuel. Upkudas kolodomi pokeda lehem. If the normal pekoid, what is pekoid? The spiritual code that will be transferred, if that will happen to them. And we ask, why is it repeated? No, those are two different things. If they die naturally, and if they die naturally, then they follow the normal ruling of Poikei Davoino Boys. Then I am wrong, because Shmuel HaNovi, as a descendant of Korach, can't make Korach so bad. It's too much of a gap. But the Im Berio Yivro, if Hashem will do something equal to an act of creation, to go back in time. This is something which is 100% abrio, as the Ibn Ezra. Earthquakes, I've seen earthquakes. This is not the earthquake that the Torah is describing as abrio. Is the going back in time erasing the historical events that will affect the future. That is abrio ibro. And what will happen? They won't die, they will be swallowed. Swallowed alive. V'yordu chaim she'oilo. And then let's go back again. What?
What's the significance?
Alive, because death is a natural event. This is not a natural event. They become erased from history. They don't die. Take a look in Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayerdu heim v'chol ha'shelohem chaim shoylo v'techas aleihem ho'oretz. And we ask, why was that important? That the earth goes back to its original position. That's the whole point. That's the whole sign. It's a sign that that history erased their actions. Vayoivdu mitoich hakohol. And we ask, they are lost? They died. What do you mean, vayoivdu? Vayoivdu. They were erased from history. This answers the question, says the Tzfas Emes, how Shmuel HaNovi could be a descendant of Korach, and why it was absolutely necessary for such an event to happen, because without it, It couldn't have happened. It couldn't be true that Shmuel is going to come out of Korach.
Okay. Well, what could it have been that Korach's children had already been born, were already tzaddikim? He could become an absolute rasha, and since Shmuel was the dependent of his children,
let me just give you the rule of this genetic spiritual code is that it affects children up to the moment of the death. Even a rosh, a minute before his death, will affect his children.
It's not transferred.
It's a different type of transference.
Is there any raya in Shmuel that he knows this had occurred? His mother was an akara, so I mean, right away, there's something, and she donates him to God right away.
Right.
I mean, there's something special about his destiny.
Right.
Does he show any evidence in his?
There is. We spoke about it. The fact that Shmuel is the last of the shoftim, right? And he is the one who fights the Jewish people when the Jewish people want a monarchy. Right? This is, what's Korach's position? Lomotis Nasu, who needs a monarchy? There is something in Shmuel which comes from Korach. Shmuel is the good side of Korach. Okay, now, so again, tomorrow, probably a short shiur.
Is there any, in Sanhedrin, it's, I think it's Sanhedrin, where the Arab says, I hear Korach, you want to show you where Korach is? Takes reputable
time off. Anachnu Badoi, we are live. That's what they call it. That is a, like...
What's the meaning of it?
There is a meaning. We are not describing a literal event. We are describing something with a
message. My wife.
Korach is still around.
But he's wiped out.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's wiped out from history, but...
But he's not wiped out from history.
Of course, of course. But as far as that particular rule, it's a...